Well, we come this morning in our studies in the prophecy of Jonah to the fourth and the final chapter of this short book. It's a chapter that is quite difficult for many people to understand, to grasp how a man like Jonah could respond to these circumstances in such a way as we see him doing here. This man who's been so blessed by God, so graciously dealt with, having such a petty kind of reaction to the things that are going on, flying into a little tantrum like a small child. It's not perhaps conveyed to us as clearly in the English as it is in the Hebrew, but the idea that is conveyed there is that he is a man behaving like a little child who hasn't had his way. He's throwing a fit. He's having a tantrum. And he's crying out to God in anger. Notice firstly in this passage in verses 1 through 4, the anger of Jonah expressed towards his God. God saw the works, we're told, of the Ninevites, how they turned from their evil ways, how they confessed their sins to God, and how God showed mercy towards them. And it displeased Jonah, we're told, exceedingly. He became very angry, and he prayed to the Lord, and he said, "Lord, wasn't this what I said when I was still in my own country? Isn't this the reason that I fled from you to Tarshish? I know what kind of God you are. And I know that if Nineveh repented, if they turned from their sins, if they acknowledge their waywardness and the evilness of their deeds, that you would be merciful towards them. And I don't like that. They're my enemies. Why should I be pleased with the way that you would deal with these my enemies?" And so he says, "It's better for me to die than to live. I wish I were dead. Can't have my way. I'd rather be dead." You see the depth of Jonah's hatred of the Ninevites? To some degree we can understand it. Here were a people who had overrun his own country. Here were a people to whom Israel had to pay tribute. This was an awful humiliation for the nation of Israel, that they should be brought under such circumstances. And here God had called Jonah to go and preach a gospel, a good news, under the guise of a warning, certainly. But Jonah knew that it was going to be good news. He knew what God was like. And he was sent to Nineveh, to this great city of the Assyrians, their masters. He hated the very idea of such a thing. He couldn't abide the thought that the God of Israel would show even the slightest degree of mercy, of grace, of love to their enemies. How can God do that when he's treating Israel in such a way? How can their God bless their enemies when he has brought a curse upon them? How can these things be? And so, as we saw earlier, off Jonah went, sailed away in the opposite direction. And now here he is after all those things that he's been through, thrown overboard into the ocean, sinking into the depths, despairing of his life, calling out to God for mercy. God is merciful to him, saves him, brings him back to shore in an incredible form of transportation. And here he is on the outskirts of Nineveh, and he wishes he was dead. Wishes he'd never prayed that prayer from the depths of the ocean. Wishes that he'd perished there. How can God have used him as an instrument of blessing upon his enemies? I mean, it's bad enough that God would show any degree of mercy to Nineveh. It's bad enough that he would show more favour, it seems, to Nineveh than to his own nation, Israel. But that Jonah should have been used as the instrument to bring that blessing, this was something that Jonah just couldn't stand. He's angry with God that he should have used him in this way. How can Jonah ever again show his face in Jerusalem? How can he ever again walk the lanes of Israel? Everyone will be pointing the finger. That's Jonah. He's the one who went to Nineveh. He's the one who preached to our enemies. He's the one who brought the blessing of God to those who have overwhelmed us. And so Jonah is angry. There's one good thing here, though. Jonah expresses his anger to the person against whom he's angry. He goes to God and he prays to God. And he pours out his grief and his anger to God. You've done this to me and it displeases me. I'm angry at you. Why have you done this? This is unfair. But he doesn't just go to someone else and say, oh, the God I serve, you know, he's a terrible God. He's an unfeeling God. Gave no account for how I would feel about this mission. Didn't consult me on it. Sent me off to my enemies. And how am I ever going to show my face in Israel again? I'm angry at God. He's an unfair, an unjust, an unfeeling God. Oh, he hasn't done that. At least he's gone to God. At least he's gone to the one with whom he's offended. But should he be angry at God? We read this story, don't we, and we think, come on, Jonah, grow up. Don't be such a baby. Can't you be thankful that God has used you in such an incredible way? Can't you be pleased that these fellow human beings have been saved from an awful death? You know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. You know the story of so many of the nations round about upon whom God's anger came. Can't you be pleased that at least for this city, at this time, God has shown mercy? But are we never angry at God? Is there never a time when, in our own way, we pout? We throw a tantrum. God, this isn't fair. God, why me? Why now? Why in this way? What makes you angry at God? Oh, you're never angry at God? I am. I'm fairly sure that most of you are, though you may not express it in those terms. Do you get angry when God blesses someone else rather than you? You've worked hard, you've served him, you've done everything that you can to please him, just like that older brother in the parable that we read. Done everything for his father, and there was his younger brother, had run off, wasted his father's money, or at least his share of the inheritance. Lived a wicked life and came back and seemed to be embraced by his father and applauded by his father. And this older brother was angry. How could his father do this for his younger brother? And he's never been blessed. He's never been able to enjoy things. He's been working hard, been an obedient son. Angry at his father. See, this is what Jonah's doing. Isn't it what you are like sometimes? And God blesses someone that you dislike and seems to bring all kinds of trouble and difficulty into the life of someone you love. Is there never even the slightest edge, hint of anger in your heart towards God? Why? Why is God doing this? This is unfair. This is unreasonable. that he should act in this way towards these people. It should be the other way round. Do you ever get angry, displeased, when God uses you in a sphere of service that you find distasteful? When he calls you to go somewhere, to do something, to act in a certain way, and you can't bear it? When he asks you to love your enemies? Doesn't it sometimes make you angry that you must do this? You'd rather hate them. You'd rather curse them. You'd rather something bad happen to them than that you should love them, than that you should do good towards them, than that you should pray for God's blessing upon them. But that's what Christ calls us to do, isn't it? To love our enemies. We're to bless those who use us ill. But it doesn't often sit well with us. Like Jonah, we can sulk, drag our feet, and without a happy heart, go about doing God's business. But it's not with joy. It's not with pleasure. We do it out of a sense of duty, rather than out of a sense of gratitude to God for all that he's done for us. Jonah was angry at God. Do we acknowledge when we're angry with God? Will we go to him and say to him, I'm angry at you, God. This is unfair. I think this is unjust. Look at the next thing that happens here. God sends an object lesson to Jonah. Verse 5. It puts it in the past tense here, but as something that has happened after verses 1 to 4 in the New King James, it's more probable that the writer is casting back to before the prayer of verse 2 and 3. That he's saying Jonah had gone out of the city. He's telling us where Jonah is when he's praying this prayer. He had gone out of the city and he had sat on the east side of the city. There he had made himself a shelter and he was going to look to watch to see, after the preaching of this message of judgment, what was God going to do to Nineveh. As he observed the people putting on their sackcloth and sitting in ashes and fasting, what was God going to do to Nineveh? And as he sat there in this rough shelter that he had made to shade himself from the sun, the Lord caused the plant to grow up and to cover this shelter and provide shade for his head to deliver him from his misery. So Jonah was grateful for the plant. But as the morning dawned, we're told, the next day, God prepared a worm, and it so damaged the plant that it withered. It happened when the sun arose that God prepared a vehement east wind. And so there's this hot wind blowing on him and this sun shining down upon his head so that he grows faint. He wishes that he were dead. This isn't just a child's pouting. This is a genuine thing. He's at the end of himself. He's uncomfortable. He's miserable. He's dehydrated. He's faint from the heat. He's got heat stroke. And he wishes he was dead. God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? Well, Jonah went to the east side of the city. Interesting, isn't it? He travelled to Nineveh from the west. He didn't want to go to Nineveh. You'd have thought that he would sit out on the west side of the city so he could get away as quickly as possible. But he's not in any hurry. Now that he's there, he wants to make sure that God does what God ought to do, in his opinion. Goes out to the east side. He's determined. He's going to sit this thing out to its conclusion. And there he has this experience. He sees the way things are going. He sees Nineveh begin to repent, to turn from their sins. And he observes, as day passes, day passes, day, that God is going to be merciful. No sign of judgment coming on India, on Nineveh. No difficulty for these people. God is going to bless them. He can see it. He can feel it in his bones. And as the 40th day comes, his anger has reached a crescendo. And he cries out to God, "See what I told you? Why did I ever come here?" And in this state, God then causes this plant to grow up and to shelter Jonah. And he blesses Jonah in this way. How pleased Jonah is for the shelter that he's received. And as in the first chapter, God has all kinds of messengers to send, doesn't he? All kinds of people and things who obey his call even more quickly than his own servant. Back there, it was the sailors and it was the wind and the sea that obeyed his message and did God's bidding. Here, it's a plant followed by a worm and a wind, each being obedient to the voice of God, each being used by God to teach Jonah. And Jonah falls into self-pity then, as the plant over him, for which he did nothing. No tilling of the ground, no fertilizing, no planting of any seed, no caring for this plant that suddenly grew up and just as suddenly died away. Oh, why me? Why is this happening to me? Jonah complains. Doesn't believe he deserves this kind of treatment from God. This is what should be happening to the Ninevites, not to Jonah. God uses all kinds of things to try and get our attention. All sorts of experiences to teach us his ways and the error of our ways. Often we're blind because we're so engrossed in ourselves and our own situation and our own thoughts and feelings that, as the old proverb says, we can't see the wood for the trees. We can't see reality. We can't see truth. We can't see real justice because we're so engrossed in ourselves and what feels right and fair to us. We don't see things from God's perspective. And sometimes God has to give us a wake-up call. He has to shake us back to sense before we'll begin to see things from his perspective. He uses difficulties and trials to wake us up from our dullness and our self-pity. And that's what he does here with Jonah. And so observe the third thing, a searching question that God gives to Jonah in verses 9 through 11. Well, initially he repeats his question of verse 4, doesn't he? God said to Jonah, "Is it right for you to be angry?" Verse 9, angry about the plant. And he said, Jonah, "Still, it is right for me to be angry, even to death." But the Lord said, "You have had pity on the plant for which you have not labored nor made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. Should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and much livestock?" That phrase, "who cannot discern between their right hand and their left," doesn't mean that he's just numbered children there, as some people have interpreted it. The phrase is used a number of times in the Old Testament, and it always refers to the fact that people don't understand truth and justice. They haven't understood the law or something of that kind. So here are ignorant people. They don't know. They've not been taught. And here they are, 120,000 persons, a great city for the time. And God has shown pity to Nineveh. Is it right for Jonah to be angry? God asks. And he shows him, you've done nothing. You were absolutely powerless to cause that plant to grow, but it grew up and it provided you shelter for a day. When it withered away, you were powerless to do anything about it. You couldn't prevent that plant from dying. You had pity on it? Well, you only had pity on it because it was helping you. It wasn't pity for the plant, it was pity for Jonah. But should I not pity Nineveh? I, the great God of creation, should I not pity Nineveh? When I have the power to do something? Jonah, you were powerless. You could do nothing. And you show pity towards this insignificant thing. Here are 120,000 people who do not understand the law. They don't understand justice. They don't understand God. Should I not have pity upon them? Should I not show mercy towards them? Should I not give them peace? Should I not bless them when I can? They've acknowledged me through your preaching. They've turned from their sins. They've come to know the law. They're no longer people who cannot discern between their right hand and their left. You have, through your preaching, have given them discernment. And should I not show pity towards them? Who, having grown in discernment, are being obedient to the law? Are acknowledging me? Have turned from their sin? Are you right to be angry, Jonah? Am I really being unfair? Should I not do for repentant Nineveh what I did for you? That's what he's asking Jonah. Here was Jonah, a servant of the living God, and he refuses to obey the call of God. What does God do? He shows mercy to Jonah, despite his rebellion. Jonah could have been wiped off the face of the earth in a moment, and God could have called someone else, but he didn't. He showed mercy to Jonah. As he sank in the depths of the waves, and Jonah cried out to God, God showed mercy to Jonah. He saved him in a miraculous way. Sometime later, whether immediately afterwards as he lay on that beach, recovering himself, or whether he had gone back to his home sometime, God gave him a second chance, sent that call to him again, gave him another opportunity to be an obedient servant rather than a rebellious servant. God showed mercy to Jonah. Why shouldn't God do for repentant Nineveh what he had done for stubborn Jonah? For rebellious Jonah. And the book ends. And we never know how Jonah responded. Because it doesn't matter how Jonah responded, does it? What matters is, how do I respond? What am I going to do with the knowledge that God has the sovereign right to work out his purposes in his way, to call me to go and to do and to act according to his wisdom and not my own. Knowing that God is always consistent with his character, there are no surprises with God once we've begun to understand him. Why was Israel under God's curse? Because they were disobedient. Why was Nineveh blessed? Because they were obedient, completely consistent with God's character. Jonah needed to learn that if he was obedient, he would be blessed. If Israel would repent, God would show mercy to them. didn't need to pout about how his enemies were being blessed by God. He needed to run back home and tell his people about how God had blessed Nineveh and how he would bless them if they would turn from their sins in the same way. That these people needed to get rid of their proud arrogance as being the covenant people of God and humble themselves before the living God and acknowledge him as their Lord and their only master and do his bidding. And so the fourth chapter brings us back to the first chapter. It explains for us why at the first opportunity Jonah ran away in the other direction. God chastened him. God rescued him. God gave him a second chance. And God patiently sought to teach Jonah a right attitude. And that should be our desire. Always that God would show us mercy. That God would chasten us if we're his children, as Jonah was, a servant, a prophet of God. That God would rescue us when we backslide, when we fall into sin. That God would give us a second chance. That God would always be teaching us. And it ought to be such a great desire in our hearts that we would be willing to endure anything that would make us more like Jesus Christ. That any persecution, that any difficulty that came into our lives, we would accept gladly as being God's way of teaching us, of training us, of maturing us, of bringing us through those purifying fires and making us like pure gold. And yet so often when trials come, when difficulties come, we don't see the hand of God in it. We don't recognize that this is God working in our lives, conforming us to the image of Jesus Christ. It's God giving us a wake-up call, showing us our sin, and seeking to bring us to a right attitude, a right outlook that will give him the glory and cause us to walk in obedience to him. Well, may the Lord help us to learn from Jonah, to not see Jonah as some prophet who lost his way and was a miserable example of how a prophet ought to live and react, but to see in Jonah a reflection of ourselves so much of the time, to learn from it, to depend more upon the living God and to be more obedient and thankful to our God for all his dealings in our lives.